I looked at my wife when we first met, and of course, I found myself with beautiful prose instantly in my mouth. I was trying to sound intelligent, waxing poetic, but I think my first words were just silly sounding. "You know, you have the nicest windows. I've not seen any quite like yours. They aren't full of suspicion or deceit. They aren't clouded, nor do they curtain off some dark secret. They've got this really nice, soft light behind them." She thought I was about the strangest person she'd ever met. I could have simply said she had beautiful eyes, but I thought I'd try being Cyrano de Bergerac. Nope, wasn't the right time. I never knew that my eyes needed to be opened until my eyes were opened. I didn't know I was searching, but yet I was searching. I needed something, but didn't know what that something was until I found the most unique someone who was more than a mere something. I didn't know I was nowhere until I was somewhere. My eyes opened by the power of the someone who is not just anyone. Sure, I thought I was here and there, but it was really not where I dreamed somewhere was, until my windows were opened. I thought they were open, but truly the vision was only a dream. When the Lord liberated my soul, I realized that my windows had been shut tight with no light or fresh air entering, not even a crack for more to slip through. I think I always knew there was more, or else I wouldn't have been looking for more. It just wasn't apparent to me what more meant. The concept of more, from God's perspective, is likely different from ours, in light of the idea that no one has seen, nor ear heard, not even has the heart of those who love Him even begun to imagine what the Lord has prepared for us. Unless the Lord unshutters the ports to our soul, our windows, no one's windows are enough for the soul-gripping comprehension of His glory. When God gives us more, and His more takes us into the beyond of the beyond, only then do we grasp the magnitude of His testimony that it is genuine. By the vision, at His disclosure, we know positively what He speaks is true. Jesus is the true for reals. I'm Social Porter, and this is Outposts, cool jazz and contemplative conversation. Go out Highway 25, make a right on Old Field Road, and go all the way down to the Stone Bridge. Turn left on the well-kept driveway which parallels the river. There at the end is a divine cafe. This broadcast is semi-live from the deck area of a rural cafe overlooking the beautiful Ocklawaha River, where the trees gently lean over the river's edge and every evening is oh so pleasant. Spring is about to get up to speed. The crocuses are already busting through in their brilliant purples and yellows, and the daffodils hang their happy heads fresh in the dew. I've noticed the birds are starting their song earlier as sunlight tips over the horizon, the light chasing the night away to begin a new day, not unlike all other days. In each new day, no one has ever lived here before, and I thrill to think I'm among the first in my house to see the rise of morning. My dreams of windows, large and small, narrow and wide, invaded my young mind, causing me to often wonder what it was all about. Then I met Jesus, who opened my windows and gave me a reason to see what was beyond the limits of my soul, a soul whose limits were such that I didn't know how limited my restraint was. Until there was God. Come, go with me to see what we see and know what God will show. Tap your toe, dream a little, and I'll be right back. Not only am I oddly fascinated with doors, I've always been equally fascinated with windows. As was mentioned, when I was young, I dreamed of doors and windows. Windows of all types. Big ones, little ones, kitchen windows, side lights wide and narrow. Fixed windows, picture windows, double hung and casement. Sliding and garden windows, jalousied or louvered. In one spectacular dream, I marveled at the high windows, the tracery, which is open stonework in a delicate branching pattern, supporting the glass in Gothic windows. So much of our lives are spent outside looking in, or at least that's the way we feel. Yet there are others who feel they are always inside looking out, neither actually crossing the great divide to connect with the beyond. We complain of being unseen, yet we immediately resent anyone looking in our windows at us, peering at us, as if they might see something we are ashamed of. Some folks pretend to respect your privacy by saying they aren't going to look in your windows. But maybe it's more because they're afraid if they look in your windows, then you'll feel like you have the right to look in theirs. Windows, like eyes, I believe are ports to the soul. Being a voyeur on Facebook, browsing other people's pictures is like peeping in the windows of your neighbors. From outside, we see their histories, as they'd like us to see. Their days of beauty, fun, food, and laughter. Almost no one puts pictures up, all framed with sadness or depression, outlining the worst days of their lives. I mean, who wants to be outside looking in someone's window and all the pictures seen are sad, staring, and alone because there's just nothing left to say? We feel intruded on when we look up from our desk only to see someone looking in the window, and not many can endure extended times of someone looking them in the eye. It feels like an intruder looking in our window, a sort of breaking and entering. When that happens, we feel like someone is rifling through our private stuff. I think God, by the blood and resurrection of Jesus Christ, has brought me from my windowless, lightless dungeon where I was held captive by sin, up into a grand sanctuary with north and south tracery. His clerestory windows are extra special. They sit above the gold-laden arcade, above stained glass triforiums, between flying buttresses above the rooftop of his holy place, in an impossibly high section of wall, with windows far above eye level. The Lord's house has extra light and fresh air, and through his windows glory glows, which not only changes us, but affords us real transformation. Through his windows, he pours blessing and right judgments. In my dreams, I see through windows with earth eyes, but sometimes I feel as though I'm seeing through the eyes of God looking out the windows of heaven. I see beauty beyond compare. Seeing as he sees, my heart grows tender. He knows where visions of the early times are stored and allows me to look in the windows to the room of memory. Fondly, through his eyes, he remembers walking with Adam and Eve together in the blue cool of the evening through the garden always fresh with flowers after the benediction of the rain. Out the open windows, as seen through the eyes of God, he inhales the perfume of April and the early discourse of new things, like the inbreaking of spring that is new every morning. From his windows he sees we are not alone, for there are other lovers who walk in the cool of the evening. Stars sit together and sing softly. The moon casts his light, and here and there the casual strollers pass a patch of subtle turquoise and silver to stride in step together, languishing in the garden of God. Upon awakening, I too walk to earthly windows and watch outside with my earth eyes. I watch first thing in the morning and last thing in the evening. Today, out my window at the settling of the day, children play down by the pond. The neighbor's cat sits on the porch waiting for something else to happen. A misty haze comes to settle on the mountains as it always does. Seeing out my windows, the days of long ago come to mind. I ponder about how soon we lose heart in our fascination with shiny things. Funny how sometimes, around the edges of the memories, there's a nudge of disappointment over things which once were shiny, but were rarely all we fancied them to be. There are two views here. One from outside a window looking in, the other from inside looking out. You know, there's two sides to every window. Although Scripture doesn't say it exactly, I can see why we can declare with some confidence that the eye is the portal to the soul. That would be outside looking in. Our eyes are like windows, and looking in the eyes of others, we can often get a flavor of how people are. We say, "She smiles with her eyes. His eyes are always a little sad." Or maybe an unkind heart is reflected in cruel eyes. When our heart is happy, our eyes glitter and flash with joy. And if we are offended, angry, and bitter, our eyes betray the sin of our hearts, leaking caustic vitriol into the world around us. I say that if we'll study the eyes of God, we will be led to examine our own eyes to see if we are rightly related to Him. If the windows of heaven are open, are our windows open too? Or do we keep them heavily shuttered, with the drapes of fear and insecurity constantly drawn? As I understand it, we are supposed to be imitators of God. Sometimes our eyes are full of pride, yet other times it's just confidence, you know. We often mistake confidence for pride, and pride for confidence. It can be pretty hard to read. It is God who brings us out of darkness into the light. When Paul was testifying to King Agrippa in Acts 26, he said that the Lord spoke to him on the road and said, "Rise and stand upon your feet, for I have appeared to you for this purpose, to appoint you as a servant and witness to the things in which you have seen, delivering you from your people and from the Gentiles, to whom I am sending you to open their eyes, so that they may turn from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and a place among those who are sanctified by faith in me." Through our windows, the attitude of our heart is revealed, whether we are inclined toward the Lord or not. Some people seem to spend an inordinate amount of time learning to make their eyes reflect something different from what's in their heart. In the theater and movies, I think that's called being an actor, and in regular life, they're called posers. A person who behaves in a way that is not genuine. I so don't want to be a poser. Having spent a large part of my life as one, often posing and not even knowing I was posing. God sees how we lean in our heart, even if we keep shut all the windows and doors to our soul. He knows. Even if we hang happy pictures within the window panes, He sees the reality behind even the most well-done facades. In Christ, the repentant heart has been revolutionized, transformed by God. He has pulled back the heavy drapes of hiding, thrown open the windows, and blessed us with the inbreaking kingdom of heaven. When we take it upon ourselves to look in the windows of God's house, the eyes of God, He invites us to peer into the rooms where the fruit of righteous judgment is stored, where the bright imagery of His promises play in a continuously looping movie, which extends to us all the invitation to join Him in the celebration of more and rightness of character. I am convinced darkness is so wrong that the mere presence of rightness causes inky darkness literal pain. I imagine that if I looked closely in the eyes of God, what would I see? In my imagination, I think I would see the occasional lightning flash, paintings of victory and intricate sculptures of his righteous army fearlessly marching, led by the famous one on a white horse. In the mirrors in the hallway, I imagine I could see the reflection of his eyes overseeing the campfires of the righteous waiting for their call, and bands of warriors praying in the evening in the late dim light of solemn tents of meeting. At the trumpet call to arms, not one praying warrior would retreat, not one foot turned away. Through the windows of God's house, I'm certain I would see, although I personally had not seen it, a living book on the Father's writing desk about the lily of the valley, his beauty born among thorns, with glory in his heart, the righteousness of the sun, like the glow of sunrise transfiguring the whole landscape of eternal possibilities forever. Met a man who said he had a dream of going to God's house. He said he walked through a beautiful green wood where the trees whispered goodness and the little flowers softly trilled at him in their tiny flower voices. As he came to the edge of the woods, there, across a short green field, was an immense mansion with many, many windows and many, many rooms. He said it had a one-of-a-kind carriage court, and beyond was the grand external entrance, which led to another grand internal entrance. He said for some reason, although he knew it was very impolite and inappropriate to peep in someone's windows, he felt invited to look in the windows into the eyes of God. With great courage, he went to the tall, double-hung, ornate sash window close to the main entrance, and there, inside, was a huge room with pictures hung all around, on the wall, high and low, over the great fireplace, in the windowsills, just everywhere. In the middle was a small desk supporting the Book of Remembrance and a good pen of precision laid across the pages. In the dream, he was made to know all those pictures, framed with bright verbs, adjectives, and descriptive phrases in gold, were God's favorite snapshots of the past and of favorite memories of things which had not happened yet. He told me it may seem odd to say, but in the moment he didn't think it strange because the Lord knows the end from the beginning. So he's already been to the end and gathered favorite memories, if that makes any sense. He said as he was looking in the window far above him, up around the tracery, between the elaborate flying buttresses, one of the high ornate windows opened and a very large flock of brightly colored birds flew out and to the east, each carrying a glowing jewel. He said he figured it was the Lord pouring out a blessing from the open windows of heaven. In the moment, the Lord spoke in the dream, with a voice like bells in the distance and giants laughing for gladness with a shout in the middle, all at once. The Lord said, "My blessing is sent at my discretion. You can't tithe the windows open, beg them open, fast them open, nor hate them shut with bitter drinks, unbelief, and disappointed brooding. My outpouring is because I send it, not because any man pries it from my hand." The man went on to say he then moved to another window far around the side, and upon looking in God's eye, the window, this time he saw an impossibly large kitchen with expansive work tables, many ovens and stoves where the daily bread was kneaded and baked. In God's kitchen was every good thing beyond imagination for those who would but ask. He could see stacks of delicacies wrapped and ordered with people's names on a little tag. He realized they were piles and piles of blessings which had not been asked for, just waiting for the person whose name was on the tag to ask, seek, and knock. He was sad, because he knew people had not asked, so their blessing and provision simply sat there. He thought to himself, if only they would believe and ask. Near one long kitchen table were vats labeled wisdom to the mighty, honor to the brave, integrity to the courageous, and hope for the poor. On nearby shelves there were large containers of refreshing, waiting to be tapped for those faint of heart, having grown weary, stumbling in the heat of the day. As the fellow woke up, he said he was thinking about Ephesians 2:10, where God says we are his workmanship and poetry. He spent the morning looking out his windows at the passers-by, pondering the extreme dream. He thought, from my windows, inside looking out, I see the people going their way, and in my opinion, they don't look much like poetry. Poetry sits neatly in a line, with meter and rhyme, and the people I see don't sit neatly in a line. They have unidentifiable meter and profoundly don't seem to rhyme. But from inside God's windows looking out, he sees a very different picture. Which one is more true, that we are poetry with beautiful meter and rhyme, or we are thinner than faint shadows, no more than a smudge on a white wall? I think it is profound that God loves us who seem so inclined to find nothing lovable of ourselves. In fact, as C.S. Lewis implied, more often than not, we see ourselves as no better than a sooty stain in fresh air, as shades with no substance. But from God's windows, he sees all our potentials, calling our probablys and more than likelies as yes and amen. From his window, he thinks we are beautiful, like God poetry. Bright and luminous. Now there's something we've really got to get into our heads. windows. Isaiah 44:18 says, "They know not, nor do they discern, for he has shut their eyes so that they cannot see." Can it be the Lord shutters the windows of some for the reason of preventing them any vision beyond themselves? If the Lord doesn't open our windows, they will not be opened. They will remain with happy pictures pasted on the inside of the glass, so others will think everything is fine, just fine. Like a woman who poses her living room in a most elegant fashion, but really she's being abused and exploited behind the scenes, for reals. Honesty can be such a difficult commodity for us to possess. We are often embarrassed and ashamed of what we think people will see and believe about us if they could see the real people behind the windows of our soul. Ephesians 1:18. Having the eyes of your hearts enlightened, that you may know what is the hope to which he has called you. Or, open the eyes of my heart. Throw open your windows and let the light of the King of Glory in. Be revolutionized and transformed, making your character and your conscience match. He makes us congruent. Speaking about the origins of his very popular song, Open the Eyes of My Heart, Paul Baloche said, "For years I've taught at these worship conferences on biblical worship and biblical expressions of worship. It occurred to me that so often we're teaching the externals. In Psalm 95 it says, 'Come, let's sing for joy, let's shout out loud, let's kneel in worship, let's clap our hands.' That's all neat, but I began to realize you can teach externals, but unless something is happening from the inside out, it's just really a form. It's like a cloud without rain." We can look like the most ornate and excellent cathedral outside to others, but what's really important is what's going on behind our eyes, behind the windows, the portals of our soul. I've met beautiful people with beautiful houses who speak beautiful words and appear to live beautiful lives. But when finally allowed to walk inside, seeing behind the windows, it is filled with chaotic clutter, unremoved trash, cobwebs, piled dirty clothes, broken things just left in a heap, and a sink full of dirty dishes and not one clean in the cupboard. I believe this is highly likely their real life. This is how they think. This is representative of their heart. Although it's really hard to hear God when you have an opinion, sometimes it is so very difficult not to have an opinion. Through our windows are revealed the heart, head, and breath of our house. Having windows is like saying, "Behold," which means look and see, from the inside and the out. In my dream of windows, the Lord was inviting me to see inside his house, and to know I was also being seen, taking comfort that I was not alone and unknown. The eyes of God are not blind to our largest problems nor the smallest detail of the smallest sparrow. Through God's windows in heaven, there is always bright sunlight and golden afternoons. He sees the kind smiles of the clouds. The rhythm of his life sits on foundations of mercy and kindness. If anything, we should set our eyes as the Lord does, the portal to our soul calling to others to look and see, or behold. I have thought it odd how it is impolite to look too deeply in someone's eyes, or how it makes people uncomfortable to have someone look directly into theirs. Why do we hide? What do we think people will see or not see? if they look in our windows. If we never let people see the real self in our eyes, how will they ever see the green shoots of grace growing in our backyard? Think about it. In the Old Testament, the idea of a window was usually taken as an opening pierced in the wall, an opening which provided light and air high up in the wall and below the eaves for security purposes. In very warm environments, they typically weren't glazed and seldom were shuttered. In Genesis 8:6, they served as air vents, as in the ark. They could be set in square frames and were large enough for a person to be lowered through them from the inside out and for someone like a thief to enter through them from the outside in, although in large cities they were protected by bars or metal lattice work. Through a window, others could be seen at street level, like Michael peered at the little people from her high window in 1 Chronicles 15:29. And with the same portal to her soul, she watched David rejoicing and dancing before the Lord and despised him in her heart. The idea behind the windows of heaven is about God who controls the rain and blessings. In these cases, the Hebrew concept of window is more a sluice or floodgate, which is used not only of the destructive flood of Genesis 8:2, but also showers of plenty and a symbol of blessing in Malachi 3:10. I'm Social Porter, and this has been Outposts, cool jazz and contemplative conversation broadcast semi-live, overlooking the broad and beautiful Ocklawaha River, where the trees gently lean over the river's edge and every evening is pleasant. Music was brought to you by Michael Volney, Trevor Gordon Hall, Lars Danielson, Myriad 3, and Miles Davis. All music use is licensed by BMI. And if you're of such a mind, go to livinginhisname.org, go down to the bottom and click the donate button and drop a nickel in the bucket. We're a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. All of your generosity is so greatly appreciated. All support was from Living in His Name Ministries, Holly Swafford Shoe Store on Main Street, McDowell Electric, Paul at International Tile, my buddy Claude down at Duke Power, and Trinity Bakers. That's right, Trinity Bakers, where there's always something good in the oven. In my dreams, I see through dream windows with earth eyes, but sometimes I feel as though I'm seeing through the eyes of God, looking out the windows of heaven. I see beauty beyond compare. Seeing as He sees, my heart grows tender. through his windows, glory glows, not only changing us, but affording us real transformation. Through his windows, he pours blessing and right judgments. Take it easy this week. Practice your mercy and kindness as you go your way. Pray for your neighbors. It really does make a difference. Be strong and courageous, and I'll talk to you next time. Listen. Uh-oh. Time stopped. What do we do now? Oh, well, I guess now isn't important anymore, because now is time word, and time stopped. It'll never be then again, so it's always now. Oh, now what? Or is that what now? Or maybe it's just what? I don't know. It's like when time stopped, all the lights went out, even in the sky. Hey, wait a minute. There's a light coming this way. This is really good or really bad. It looks like someone walking. Oh, it's just a kid with a flashlight. What's that? Yeah, I don't know what happened. Time stopped, the lights went out, and... what'd you say? You're looking for the fuse box. Kid, the universe doesn't have a fuse box. Well, maybe your mom says there is, but I seriously doubt it. Sure, you can look all you want. Okay, good luck. Hope you find the universal fuse box. The universal fuse box. Right. And we all thought all this was going to go on forever like it's been going. Not. Well, I'll be dogged. The lights are coming back up. So, they're dimming again. Yeah, buddy. Well, that fuse is blown and there's not another one. I'd say the meters run out on the whole mess, just as I thought. This really is the end.